Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. This is my dad, Ted.
Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Knightsky. This past week, I had a great opportunity to coach a few people through an interview process. As we were reviewing their information and discussing their strategies, I heard a few voices from my past through me to those I was serving, which is why this week I want to once again review the impact you have on all those around you and how impactful you can be in a moment, how that moment can guide others, and how your simple presence can influence those who impact so many other people. So, a couple of quick reminders here of our mindset. We charge towards the storm, and we do that in an effort to take on the challenges that we are facing proactively and optimistically, and that's what we call buffaloing. We do this because we are leaders, and a leader is anyone who has influence over another person. This all comes from your willingness to challenge assumptions, traditions, and the pessimism that all too often prevails in the cultures that many of us have to navigate each day. So last week, when I heard myself say, "Just remember, only you know if you screwed up," I thought, I need to share with the other smart thinkers why I even know that saying. I was coaching someone who was preparing for an interview, and they were very nervous about, well, what if I don't tell all of the information that I know? And I just kept saying, "Just remember, only you know if you screwed up." It all started when I was in the eighth grade in 1985, and it was spring. And my middle school music teacher was telling us how the high school chorus director was coming over for tryouts, and that it was a really big deal for those of us who wanted to continue on into choir in high school. Now, my music teacher in middle school was a legend in her own right. She was firm, gentle, and had an endearing spirit and a love of music. I did an episode about Miss Domes, my middle school teacher and grade school teacher, in which I discussed how she instilled a love of music within me. But she made it very clear that day that the choir conductor from the high school was coming, and these tryouts were basically like trying out for varsity. And my entire education to this point had one thing in common. All the teachers I had were women, and a good chunk of them were Catholic nuns. And my school was engaging, and I loved it, and I have some great memories of many of my teachers. But the idea that a man was coming over, and a man who was also a choir teacher, well, that kind of blew my mind, and I wanted to be in choir. I wanted to be in the concert choir. Bill Ross is a legend in my hometown of Port Washington. And while he is no longer with us in body, that man's spirit is within thousands of us across the world. Why? Well, he was kind, caring, funny, loving. He pursued excellence and had a passion for what he did. He also believed in people, and he coached your confidence. So on that day in spring of 1985, I was super nervous. I was told that it was very unlikely that I'd make the concert choir because I was not mature enough. Now let me qualify that for a second. Mature is not a word that has been thrown around in the adjectives used to describe me, especially in my youth. But immature in this context was actually very accurate. In eighth grade, I was 4'10". Physically, mentally, and emotionally immature. In the choir, I sang with the girls. I was the only boy hanging out with those girls, and while that may sound like an advantage, it wasn't, because they were all taller than me and had been taller than me since the fifth grade. I was in the front row of every performance, my entire life to that point, and had been promised many cookies from my teachers if I just behaved while I was in that front row. You see, I had a tendency to make the people around me laugh while I kept a straight face, a quality people close to me know that I still practice today. Anyway, our music teacher was in the basement of our school across from the cafeteria, and her room constantly smelled like fresh baked bread. And Mr. Ross was in that room with Mrs. Domes, and she would introduce each student as we entered, and then she'd speak a little bit about us. We sat on chairs outside of the room waiting to be called, and it was absolutely nerve-wracking. I was nervous because all the kids who had always had solos and had good voices or were popular were going in and out, and it seemed like they had a ton of confidence. Well, when we talk about a leader having the ability to influence others, there are so many ways that can happen. Miss Domes called me into the music room, and seated behind the piano, there he was, Mr. Ross, with his square silver-rimmed glasses, white short-sleeved shirt and tie on. He looked at me and smiled, looked at the sheet of paper with my name on it, and said, "Well, Theodore, let's hear your voice." He began to play the scales on the piano and asked me to sing along. Now, if anyone listening knows anything about voice, I was a first alto in eighth grade. Those of you who don't know what that means, it means I could sing very high and not very low. Like, I could sing right along with Cyndi Lauper in the 80s. With ease. Mr. Ross began the scales in the middle of the piano, and then he worked his right hand over to the right side, and I just kept singing higher and higher and higher. With ease. My vocal range in eighth grade was, well, wide and high. He started in the middle of the piano again, and then he scaled to the left to hear my low range, and I think he maybe hit two keys, and I stopped. And he stopped, and he told me, "Tighten up your abdomen muscles, stand up straight," and then he started again, and I got a little further to the left, but not much. He asked me a few other questions, which I don't remember, and then he stood up, shook my hand, and told me that he'd be sending over a list of students who made concert choir by the end of the week. I remember leaving kind of indifferent and thinking, "Eh, I'm a long shot." Immature kept ringing in my head, and I was once again struggling with confidence because of my shortness, high voice, and inability to grow a mustache like my classmate Steve. On Friday, one of my classmates came flying out at recess and said that Miss Domes had put a note on the door from Mr. Ross, and it said who made concert choir and who was in the mixed choir. Now, concert choir was a big deal. Everybody had been talking about it, all the people who loved music, and I had resigned myself that I had not made it. So I took my time, and eventually I walked down the stairs to the choir room, turned right, and I looked at the door. I had passed a few of my classmates who were saddened by the fact that their name wasn't even on either list, and that started my heart pounding. Suddenly, it meant a ton to me, and I really wanted to be in the concert choir. I walked up to the door, and the list said Thomas Jefferson Middle School, 8th grade, concert choir, eligible students, and the list on that side was long. And then the second column said St. Mary's Middle School, students eligible for concert choir, and the list was short. It also was not alphabetized, which I didn't realize because being a Knightsky with an N, I've learned to just look to the middle of whatever column to see if my name was there, which I did, and I didn't see my name. My heart sank. That is until I noticed the Roman numerals 4. You see, my full name is Theodore Charles Knightsky IV, and then I saw Theodore Knightsky IV listed as one of the very few from my school. I stood there looking up at the list. Remember, I was even shorter than the teachers. And I was numb with the idea that I was in concert choir. I popped my head in, and I looked at Miss Domes, and she saw me and said, "He really likes your high voice." Mr. Ross saw in me an asset that I believed was a deficit. And as a result, I believe that most of my life and confidence actually comes from one moment. And that was the moment that day in the tryouts where he said, "Tighten up your abdomen and sing from your belly." You see, because of that first interaction, I had the benefit of being in concert choir and sitting next to Jamie and John for 4 years, flying to New York City, singing in Carnegie Hall, competing in and winning choir festivals around the Midwest, getting all kinds of medals at solo and ensemble, singing and dancing in musicals, being in the swing choir, all of these opportunities that presented themselves because of what I thought was a deficit. I sat close to the girls all through high school. But over time, well, that actually became a benefit. And my inability to grow a mustache, well, that eluded me through college. Because I was only 5'8 when I graduated from high school, and somehow I grew to 6 foot, and now I can grow a mustache. However, Mr. Ross meant so much more to me and many others. Because what he taught me then helps me today with my kids and all those I love and support. I loved him. I loved being around him. He had the best laugh, and when he conducted us on stage, he'd stare at you individually. I don't know how he did it. He was energetic, and somehow I believe that every member of our huge choir felt like he was conducting each of us individually. He was amazing. I had him for choir all 4 years. It was my highest grade every quarter, and when I was struggling, there was always time to stop in his office and chat. He would coach you, listen to you, support you, and guide you, and that was just about your life. Not even music. He was like having a brother, an uncle, a friend, and your dad all wrapped up into one person. As I was coaching a few people this week and trying to grow their confidence, I heard Mr. Ross in my voice. And I want to share with you a few key leadership and life lessons I learned as an incredibly short, physically, emotionally, and mentally immature high schooler from Mr. Ross. Number one, confidence is within us all. Mr. Ross, in my lessons, my choir lessons, where I would be with him individually, would say things to me like, if you have the right posture, it all works itself out. How you carry yourself tells the world what to expect. I always took this to be simply, if I believe I can do it, I can. And that is incredibly true. Those of us who allow our self-talk to remind us of our incompetencies, well, we end up listening to them. And you know what that means? That means we reinforce those weird self-talking points and we eventually believe them. So take the right mental posture and get to building your confidence. Number two, when you make a mistake, you are usually the only one who knows it. When I was in musicals, I would watch him coach the upperclassmen and women who were the leads. I mean, we were doing gigantic musical productions, costumes, makeup, and here we go with the mustache again. I even had a mustache in one of the musicals when I was a Keystone cop. But I would hear him say to others, and then eventually one day to me, no one knows that you missed a dance step or misspoke a line if you just keep going. When you're on a stage, if you err, you're the only one who knows it. So if you are in charge and you screw up, it's over if you just keep going. However, too many of us, when we err, we stop, we point it out, we get stuck, we ask people, then we start dragging others into our mess and pointing out to the world that we messed up. Mr. Ross? No. He said, fail and move fast past it. Don't think about it. No one watching knows but you. Learn from it and go. So move along and maintain your confidence. The third thing. When you're in the spotlight, you can't see anyone, so listen. One of the weirdest experiences I've ever had was the first time I was on stage and the house lights went down and the spotlights came on. One, you're blind and you cannot see the audience, and then suddenly, you feel really alone. Weirdly alone. But then, you hear oohs and ahs and laughter and excitement and clapping, and then you're propelled. When you're leading, too often you're blinded by the spotlight of your own responsibilities and you have to stop and listen. You have to seek feedback. You have to become energized by what you cannot see. Leaders who seek input grow and increase their success. And as leaders, they do that because they are listening and including others. And the last thing I learned from him, many voices make one. In concert choirs, there are sections, sopranos, altos, tenors, baritones, and basses. I was a tenor, you know, like Pavarotti. But Mr. Ross, he would talk about how when we were truly at our best, we sounded like one voice. When I was a senior, he asked me to help him one day at the piano. This is after 4 years of being in concert choir. Now, I wasn't screwing around, so I didn't know why he asked me to the front, but for the first time, I heard our choir. You see, when you're in the choir, you focus on you, your sound, so that you don't mess up. You hear the people around you a little bit, but you're really trying to make certain that you're singing your best. Once in a while, the leaders need to step away to see the organization from a different perspective, pull others out and have them hear and see the big picture from a totally different angle. I was a tenor all through high school. I had experiences I would have never been able to have if it weren't for Mr. Ross. My first airplane ride when we went to New York City. My first kiss at a cast party. My first slow gin and 7-Up at that same cast party. My success as a soloist, being in a barbershop quartet, being on a broken-down bus in Iowa and being small enough to sleep up and in the overhead luggage area. And then learning all the lessons of life from Mr. Ross. You see, Mr. Ross was an amazing leader and man, but he is an influence within me and others still today. And do you know why? Because he saw in others possibility. He led and conducted and taught through metaphors that seeded in me, and I'm sure a lot of other people. He saw what I perceived to be a deficit, and he made it an asset. When I graduated from high school, one of the very last things I did at our graduation ceremony was sing in the choir. just like when I started. And once I was done, I would go back to Port High and visit Mr. Ross. I'd go out for a drink with him eventually when I got old enough, and eventually I'd have lunch with him and a few other retired teachers on occasion. And while he's no longer with us, his lessons can be heard in my voice and others with frequency. The question I have for you is, do you see those around you for their assets? Are you coaching others to confidence? Bill Ross's choir room, well, it was a safe haven for many. Walking through my high school halls while I was a freshman ducking under the armpits of the seniors was not fun when I was a young kid. But going to choir? That was wonderful. Each of us, each day, have others in front of us who expect nothing from us other than to be there in that moment for them. I don't care what you do for a living. Just follow Bill Ross's rules by supporting confidence in others, supporting others when they make a mistake, listening to those you serve, and finally, recognizing that when we collaborate in a unified direction, we are our best. So this week, be where your feet are and plant them firmly to hold up the people around you that you serve. So let's do some smart thinking. List strategies you employ to move forward when you err. Describe how you can employ Bill Ross's leadership lessons. List people in your life that supported your leadership and coaching. That's it. That's the Smart Thinking Podcast. Hey, as always, thank you for listening, and please share this episode on your social media platform and rate it as well. And thank you to the Well Pennies for their great music. Make sure you stream them on your favorite service or go to their website and buy their newest CD. Now, as we close out for the week, one of my favorite learnings that I picked up along my leadership journey is this. One change by leadership is 10 changes for each follower. I usually use this quote in a cautionary manner to leaders and boards. It is very true that one simple change by someone in charge can have significant consequences for a lot of people. However, in the context of today's Smart Thinking episode, I want you to think of your influence as one change in someone's life that becomes many changes for that person. Mr. Ross made one change in my life. He saw what I thought was a deficit. You know, I saw myself as like Mr. High Voice, Shorty, front row, never going to be on the risers kind of person. And he put me in the honors choir, the concert choir, as a freshman. That one decision on his part had hundreds of consequences for me over the course of high school and now life. We as leaders have an obligation to seek that one change in those we support so that they can have 10 shifts, 10 chances, 10 new opportunities. Last thing I want to tell you about Mr. Ross. He's a legend, not just to me, but to a lot of people. Bill, as he insisted I call him once I was an adult, had one other quality that meant a lot to a lot of people, and especially me. He was respectful. And not in the, like, he opened the door kind of way, but he also did that. I mean, he really respected you for who you were, and he was amazingly accepting of all the personalities that love the theater, the music, and the arts. His tolerance for misfits, jocks, beauty queens, and everybody else really modeled for all of us that we belonged. His legacy resides within many of us, but at the end of the day, he took a chance on Theodore, and last week, a man who no longer conducts was within me supporting others. And that's the ultimate lesson here. Leaders matter. People matter. Our influence matters. You matter. It's a burden to be a leader. Not because it's a curse, but because it's an obligation to be our very best every day for those around us and to constantly be seeking and looking for the assets in others so that they can stand in the spotlight and recognize that they're not alone.
Welcome to life. There's no turning back. Even while we sleep, we will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to. Help me to There's a room where the light won't find you. Holding hands while the walls come tumbling down. And when they do, I'll be right behind you. So glad we've almost made it. So sad they had to fade it. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Thank you, Mr. Ross.